In the last few years, headlines about music have not just been about new releases or chart-topping hits. Instead, they've often focused on something far less glamorous but incredibly valuable – catalogues. Bob Dylan sells his entire songwriting catalogue to Universal for nearly $400 million. Bruce Springsteen's catalogue goes to Sony for a reported $500 million. Shakira sells her publishing rights. Neil Young, Stevie Nicks, and dozens of others follow suit. Investment funds like Hipgnosis and companies like Sony and Universal are spending billions to acquire the rights to old songs. Welcome to the catalogue gold rush. In this episode of Behind the Charts, we'll explore why investors are buying old songs, how these deals are structured, and what it means for the future of music ownership. To understand the gold rush, let's start with the basics. What exactly is a catalogue? In the music industry, a catalogue refers to the collection of rights associated with an artist's work. This usually means publishing rights, songwriting credits, and sometimes also includes master recording rights. Whoever owns the catalogue earns money whenever those songs are streamed, sold, licensed for commercials, movies, or TV, or performed publicly. It's a steady stream of income that can last decades. For investors, this is the key point. Music catalogues are what's known as evergreen assets. A hit song from the 1970s can still generate royalties today, just as reliably as when it was released. Think of Bohemian Rhapsody, Born to Run, or Like a Rolling Stone. These songs don't fade with time. If anything, they grow more valuable as they become cultural touchstones. For investment funds, buying a catalogue is like buying real estate with guaranteed rental income. So why the surge now? Several factors converged. First, the rise of streaming created a stable, predictable revenue stream. Unlike the volatile days of CD sales or downloads, streaming revenue flows consistently every month. This makes catalogues easier to value and more attractive to investors. Second, interest rates in recent years were historically low, pushing investors to look for alternative assets with steady returns. Music rights offered just that. Third, the pandemic highlighted the stability of catalogues. While touring shut down, streaming and licensing revenue continued, proving their resilience. The numbers are staggering. In 2020, Bob Dylan sold more than 600 songs to Universal. In 2021, Bruce Springsteen sold both his masters and publishing rights for a reported $500 million. Stevie Nicks sold a majority stake in her publishing for $100 million. Neil Young sold half his catalogue to Hipgnosis for $150 million. These deals aren't just for legendary artists either. Younger acts are cashing in too, with Justin Timberlake and Imagine Dragons selling rights. For artists, the appeal is clear. Take a huge upfront payment now, rather than wait for decades of royalties. For investors, the math makes sense. A catalogue generating $10 million a year in royalties might sell for 20 times that amount, $200 million. It's expensive, but if the songs continue to earn reliably, it's a strong long-term investment. Unlike stocks, which fluctuate, or real estate, which requires upkeep, a song just keeps playing and paying. The role of licensing is especially important. Songs earn money not just from streaming, but from sync deals, placements in movies, TV shows, ads, and video games. When Fleetwood Mac's Dreams went viral on TikTok in 2020, streams soared and licensing opportunities multiplied. Owning catalogues means capturing that upside whenever cultural moments revive old hits. Hipgnosis Songs Fund, founded by Merck Mercuriadis, has been one of the most aggressive players. The company has spent over $2 billion acquiring catalogues from artists and songwriters. Their pitch to investors is simple. Songs are as valuable as gold or oil, but they produce income without depletion. Major labels like Sony and Universal have also ramped up acquisitions, competing fiercely for rights. But not everyone is convinced this gold rush is sustainable. Critics argue that valuations are inflated. If investors are paying 20 or 30 times annual earnings, it could take decades to recoup costs. What if streaming growth slows? What if cultural tastes shift? There's also the question of concentration. If a few big companies own the majority of catalogues, they could wield enormous power over what music gets licensed and how much it costs. For artists, selling catalogues is both financial and emotional. Some see it as securing their legacy, ensuring their families benefit from their work. Others, like Taylor Swift, have fought fiercely for ownership, re-recording albums to regain control. The decision often depends on age, financial needs, and philosophy. Older artists may prefer a lump sum now, while younger ones may want to hold on to rights as their careers continue. The catalogue boom also raises broader questions about creativity. If investors control old songs primarily as financial assets, will they focus on maximising licensing at the expense of artistic considerations? Will music become less about art and more about return on investment? At the same time, catalogues can fund new opportunities. An artist who sells their rights for $100 million may have the freedom to take creative risks, launch businesses, or support causes. Looking ahead, the catalog gold rush shows no signs of stopping. Even with economic uncertainty, music remains a safe bet because it is deeply embedded in culture. Every wedding, commercial, or TikTok trend uses music. As long as people keep listening, catalogues will generate revenue. Investors know this, and that's why they're willing to pay such high prices. In the end, the catalogue gold rush reflects both the enduring value of music and the shifting dynamics of the industry. Behind the charts, the story isn't just about new hits but about old songs finding new life in financial markets. The music you grew up with is not just nostalgia, it's a billion-dollar asset class.